Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Mad Jin.
With guest co-host.
Knack Soldier.
We shall get this thing, not thing, but thing, started.
Oh boy.
Welcome to our listeners to Polycast 284. I'm John Ryder, a.k.a. Knack Soldier, and along with myself, we have Mad Jin.
Hi.
We have Makalua.
All sponsored by Tea and Cookies.
We have the Mian Team.
Now bringing you a 1.3 pointy sticks multiplier.
And of course, we have Dan Quick himself.
I'll show you a multiplier.
I'll show you a pointy stick.
I'm wondering how Phil got 0.3 of a pointy stick.
I said 1.3, but Mackie's fan denied it.
John.
Yes, right here.
Congratulations on now being the second most frequent guest co-host on this show. This is your 9th appearance. Well done.
That's awesome. Wow. Hopefully I don't screw this up and you invite me back.
Well, see, the problem is once you get to 10, we have to give you a t-shirt, and I'm really not in the mood.
We have to send you home after that.
We can revoke that. We don't have to keep that long term.
If Alpha Shard is listening, seeing as how you've been on the show 15 times, your t-shirt got lost in the mail. Sorry about that. There's nothing I can do about it.
Well, we kind of assimilated him, so, you know, same difference.
Yeah.
If you're out of t-shirts, I'll take a coffee cup instead.
So, Mackie.
Whoa. Why am I responsible for this?
Well, you probably have ones you don't use anymore, right?
No.
Just be courteous and don't give him one you dropped on the floor too much.
Look, John is okay with a coffee cup, but he'd much prefer a coffee cup that was once owned by Mackie.
Well, that would be awesome.
My cup's mine. Can't have.
This is going much better now, yeah.
Yep.
We've improved the quality of this conversation substantially.
Yep. Congo with a K, not with a C, because, you know, get over it.
It doesn't even matter to me anymore at this point. Screw that. It just doesn't matter.
Mavembo Nzinga. And I probably just messed that up, but whatever.
It actually sounded like you practiced that.
Nope.
Either practiced it well to say it correctly or practiced it well to say it incorrectly. Either way, it was well done.
He has at least attempted to say it in the past.
You said it with confidence, so I'll give you that.
There you go.
Woohoo!
All right, so let's get the boring stuff out of the way first. Civability is Nikisi, so 2 extra food production and 4 extra gold from every relic, artifact, and sculpture, which is just a weird thing. I don't know why you want to eat sculptures, but whatever.
It's stop licking the sculpture. Either.
If it's made of chocolate, imagine.
Nope, stop licking it.
That's a lollipop.
In addition to the usual culture that you get. So basically, you get extra food and production. It's nice. A little extra gold is okay. And of course, you do get double the great writer, artist, musician, and great merchant points, which is a lot. The palace also gets 5 great work slots because you have no holy sites. As Mavamba, his convert thing is no holy sites whatsoever. You can't have any unless you're fighting Russia, in which case you can have lots and lots of holy sites because the game is a little broken that way. Because Lavras get turned into holy sites and the game doesn't actually stop to go, maybe you shouldn't have that. But they do get the founder belief of any religion that has established itself as the majority religion in that city. Well, there you go. And of course, you get a free apostle whenever Mabanza or Theater Square is built. So while you don't go and build a religion, whenever you pop out a Mabanza or a Theater Square district, you can spread a religion that you like and prefer. Like, say, somebody brought you Jesuits. You can spread that around.
Well, so in that way, you could help someone else perhaps win a religious victory, even though you yourself can't. Aww.
Or you can be the little jerk who builds apostles and runs them off into the enemy near somebody's holy ground and watch them die so that the other person who's about to win a religious victory loses.
Could also take them in co-op games and block it. Or just against the computer, if there's ever a need for it, and just use them to block people since they're not on their own lair.
Yep. Just build a wall of apostle bodies. Yeah, it'll be great. Just
put them on whatever tiles, like Dan's Niter. That's a good spot for it.
Yep.
Oh, what do I care about Niter? This isn't Civ 3 and Saltpeter.
Yeah.
No, you don't care about it that much, I admit.
Yep.
So. Now, if you're on my call, you might have some words.
Mm-hmm.
Easiest thing is their agenda. So they like civs who give their religion to Congo. They dislike civs who don't give them their religion to Congo.
Next turn after you meet.
Literally. Literally. They don't religion. I declare war on you because you're a jerk. Yeah. Why don't I have your religion already?
Yeah, you obviously don't believe in your own stuff.
Yep. Obviously. Anyways, easy early game stuff. Run around. Go find some relics. Happen to pick up candy and then hit up a few natural wonders. Sure, you can probably get a few relics that way. There's that random free relic that you can still get. And, well...
Please stay at or...
Yeah.
Please, don't forget to take the opportunity to fleece them.
Mm-hmm. You could just buy them if you're really bored. Yeah. Or you could just zip over and, borrow some relics from somebody who got some.
And for those listening wondering, wait, Magic just mentioned candy. That's not, something that you consume, although there's that too.
Yeah, you could.
Referring, of course, to the religious candy city-state. Receive a relic every time you discover a new natural wonder and earn plus 50% faith from all relics.
Yeah. Otherwise, the doubling up the Great Merchant is probably the best part about the initial thing. It's the easiest one to take care of.
Plus, there's some Great Merchants that are going to help you down the path for a culture victory, if that's what you want to do.
Or any other type of victory. It just means you get them faster, double, and it's just more and more and more. And you can just plow through everybody because you have all the Great Merchants.
Yep, you get them more quickly and you deny them to other people at the same time.
Mm-hmm. They have Nagao Mabeba, which is a swordsman replacement, which obviously doesn't need iron. And their Mamanza is a unique district that replaces the neighborhood, and you get it much, much earlier. Of course, Mamanza has to sit on jungles or forests, which is fine, because if you don't happen to have a lot, eventually you can just go plant a forest and then plant a house in the forest. Seems a little weird, but okay.
It's called a treehouse, Magic.
Yeah, building treehouses everywhere. Could, skip a step, but whatever. And of course, in the mid to later game, you obviously want to go archaeological museums over art museums, because no one really cares about the sculpture great works, because there's just not enough of them for it to matter. You get a handful of sculptors in the whole game, and not even necessarily enough to do a theme. Like, you might if you're lucky and you happen to hit all the right people, but artifacts. They are tasty. And good in milk.
Yeah, it's definitely a mid-tier civ in general, especially from a war perspective. It's unique units, a little more expensive to upgrade, so another like an extra 5 gold. So it's not your best civ for rush. Yeah.
No, it's a good civ for rush. What are you talking about?
It's good because you don't have the iron requirement as well, so you don't have to factor that into your city placements at all, necessarily, early on. And the ability to resist the range damage is pretty nice. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you lose a little strength now, which I think is kind of silly, but it's relatively
It's not
manageable.
Enough.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. You can zip through woods and rainforests just like a scout
after
the scout's been promoted. That alone is way better than the 5 melee strength difference, because if somebody is pelting you, you can just zip your way through the forest and leave them behind.
Is it 5? What is their melee strength these days?
It's 35 now.
Yeah, but they brought the normal swordsman down, so it's not 5 strength difference any longer.
No, I'm thinking versus Rome, really.
Oh, well, okay.
That's really the comparison with the Legion in this case, which is...
I think it's worth considering that you use on their own merit, though. I mean, yes, Rome can also sword rush, but anybody can in principle sword rush, especially if their opponent's not defending themselves well. Yeah,
the difference is exactly 1 point of combat strength. It's 36 now.
It's definitely an improvement over a normal swordsman in my mind.
Oh, beyond it. The plus 10 combat strength when defending is the exact same as the first promotion that you can also get for plus 10 combat strength for defending.
Yeah.
Versus ranged.
Yeah, you can
you like archer spam. Go screw yourself. And I'm going to take you out. So basically, you can use these to rush somebody who is trying to defend themselves with archers and then run over the archers.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But when you're upgrading warriors and you want to do that, you pick Rome. Versus Congo. Congo's a bit more expensive on your gold reserves than it would if you were in Rome. It's not as used as much against real players as some of the other civs are. Their start bias tends to put you in the middle of a Pangaea map too, surrounded by other people, which sometimes is good if you can make friends. Sometimes not so good.
Yeah, it sort of depends. But you do get lots of rainforest start. Or at least you're fighting Brazil for the rainforest start. If you choose to leave a lot of rainforest around, anybody trying to invade you is going to be stuck at one move per turn, waiting to try and slip through. And then, well, you could just zip around them and mass assault. Get that whole nice army you got there. Too bad it's easy for us to surround it and crush it.
And as for the Mbanza, the neighborhood district replacement, it comes earlier in the game, number one, and it's going to provide you with +5 housing, which is the...
Flat,
yeah. You don't have to worry about, is this a charming appeal for my neighborhood? No, you're just going to get that full stop, and you're going to get that earlier, and then you're going to get some food from it as well, plus more gold, as if you needed more gold from your relics and all of the great merchants that you've been churning out. So more gold begets more gold.
Mm-hmm. Plus extra 2 food, plus 4 extra gold. Why not? Keeping in mind, though, the Mbanza does not allow you to ever get the Eureka that requires a neighborhood with a great appeal. One minor detail.
And a thread that was started in the last week as of this recording on Civilization Fanatics Center called Convince Me Congo Isn't Top Tier. One of the replies from Eliminator Senior is, Congo is a polarizing sieve.
Mm.
And I thought, well, to varying degrees, that's any sieve in the game. But yeah, I don't think it is top tier, but it can be top tier for what it is that you want to do. I mean, if you're thinking, okay, top tier as a rush domination sieve, no. But thinking, top tier maybe for something, I don't know, culture related? Yeah.
Well, okay. On Eliminator Senior's list of reason for downgrading Congo, the part you left him out was rank them in the bottom 10.
Yeah, that's kind of silly.
I don't think they are bottom 10, but okay. He says, no religious victory. If it's a ranking about can you get a religious victory and who's the best for getting religious victory, okay, then they would be on the bottom because they can't. If you totally ignore the religious victory...
It's not like you're bad at it. You just don't do it full stop. You're not in the game, man.
Yep. He says the leader bonus is weak, and he's talking about follower beliefs, but it's you get the founder belief. So...
And given issues some of us have had with religion, particularly the underwhelmingness that I and I know some other people feel towards religion, the fact that Congo cannot go for a religious victory, knee-jerk reaction. Oh my gosh, they're completely eliminated from one of the victory conditions of the game. Therefore, that puts them at the bottom.
Yeah.
No. Even if religion was really, really good, and let's say religion was really, really, really good in Civ 6, however we want to define that, that just means that you don't have to worry about that in the sense of, well, fine, I'm going to focus on something else.
Yep. I do have to point out, though, you do get the founder belief. But the religious belief code, like the code that implements the religious belief, does not work well when you are not the founder of the religion. So while Congo would get the founder belief for, say, Jesuit education in a city, if that is the one that got there, they would get that because that's a per city thing. But the getting gold per city, not so much. So stuff like that is a little weird. So he says the Civ bonus seems powerful, but doesn't kick into full gear until late, which is unless you can get some early relics. Well, I mean, okay, so if you're waiting for artifacts to chew on them, then yes, that's about mid-game, and then you like zip through it. That's fine. Otherwise, you can go get relics for other people. He says double GP points are good, but only for cultural victories. Well, that's not really true, because obviously double merchant points are useful for everything. And if you get double writer points early in the game, that means you have lots of writing, so your culture borders will expand faster, and therefore you have more tiles to work and more stuff that you don't have to spend money on to get, or you could just sell it. Like if you're not going for a culture victory, you could always just sell works of writing and other stuff to other people to make sure that there's enough art and artifacts out there to deny anybody the tourist victory. There's benefits to that. Narrow focus, too specific to culture victory. It's not really that specific, especially when you're getting food and production and gold as your main bonuses.
It's one thing to say that you can use these to your advantage for a culture victory. It's another thing to say you can only use these for culture victory, and that's not true.
Yeah, very much not.
Also in the thread, Cairo, quote, I dare say Congo is the most challenging artificial intelligence opponent because of its tendency to conquer, aggressive expansion, absurd culture growth, and science focus as well, unquote.
They do tend to gout science, but I don't seem to notice a lot of units when I'm fighting. Nothing out of the ordinary.
I don't know. AI-wise, either Congo is next to somebody who founds a religion but doesn't make units and therefore gets wrecked, and therefore Congo starts snowballing, or Congo is next to somebody who does found a religion, Congo attacks them, and then Congo gets wrecked. It's usually about how it works out. Now, I would throw Congo roughly mid-tier overall, probably a mid-plus high, depending.
Yeah, I would set up her middle. I think a reason why Congo gets so much dislike is because they're middle tier, so then they're getting shouted at from both the upper tier and the lower tier. They're just getting squished from both ends.
Yeah.
So, hey guys, did you know Japan was in Civ 6? Civilization abilities, Meiji Restoration, I think I said it right. It gives them bonuses for districts that are built next to each other. So put all your districts on one side if you can. Just all the bonuses.
Yeah, Japan's definitely one of those civs that you're okay with putting cities four apart and then just mass sharing district spam.
You can go faster towards smashing, you can go faster towards a religious victory and for a cultural victory. But you can still do the other ones too.
You can do the other ones with anybody, but it is pretty well suited for both military and the culture stuff, so.
And I know some people are like, oh, what do you mean their unique district isn't either a commercial hub or a campus, so therefore, bleh. Well, no, that just means you can concentrate on those a little earlier, and then as the district's cost scaling, LOL, gets worse,
yeah.
And you start looking at, let's add an encampment or whatever, oh, it's a half cost. Oh, let's add a theater, oh, it's half cost.
Half cost, exactly.
Just build encampments and hog all the GG points.
That too.
Yeah, that's good.
You will win on deity that way, if you control your units decently.
And they still have the samurai's unique units.
If you've got high production cities because of your districts, then it's still a good unique unit to go on the offensive. But unlike some of the other unique units that you can upgrade warriors to, this one you can't do that.
Yeah, it's kind of crappy that way.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it.
Which is stupid.
But that's a pretty big problem for like this unit and the next civ we're going to cover.
Well, it's a lot of units that are like that.
Yeah.
That should be changed.
I agree.
I think this is one of the weaker sides of Japan's bonuses, if not
the weakest. Yeah, you could totally ignore the samurai and not even notice.
And they're still two movement speeds lower than the knights, which,
I think the thought range in there is that it's early medieval, which means you could, in theory, have these while everybody else has swords.
Yeah.
In theory. But not really.
No, in most cases, especially in multiplayer, you're not going to just face swords by that time. And its benefit of having the same attack strength, despite being damaged, just isn't enough of a bonus to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, that always sounded cool, even back in the Civ 5 days, but it's never as strong as it sounds in practice.
No, it's not a game changer, that's for sure.
Unique building is the electronics factory instead of a regular factory.
Culture from the factory is pretty good. Just, I don't like the late bonuses, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, it would make some difference, but not enough difference kind of thing.
Yeah, it depends what you're going for, but if you're just smashing everybody, then it's still there. You can get to your late game stuff a little faster.
I'd also say that at that point, it's also when culture costs start getting really expensive to get more tiles. So, at minimum.
Well, the factory is something you make a decent amount of, too, though. So, it's not like you're going out of your way to build something you wouldn't ordinarily build in order to get this culture. No.
No, but it helps give you culture to plow through some more stuff.
Yeah, you want those armies? Yeah, it's late game stuff. Some fascism in the face, FF. There you go.
Divine Wind bonus, which is Hojo's, gives their land units +5 combat strength in the land tiles adjacent to the coast, and the naval units also gives +5 combat strength in shallow water, so not out in the middle of the ocean, unfortunately. Campment, holy site, and theater districts are built in half the time. So speaking of culture and other things, and smashing, all of the things, religious smashing, culture smashing, and just plain old smashing.
Divine Wind's pretty good.
In a multiplayer game, because we keep doing island plates, they would be extra powerful on that for fighting, because most of their tiles are going to be the coast.
The half-price encampments are pretty nice for smashing stuff in general, too.
Yeah, they are pretty good, especially getting out that great general, a classical great general with those half-price encampments. Yeah, very good.
And his agenda is Bushido, which means he likes civilizations with a strong military, but only if they're also strong in faith or culture. Mm-hmm. So if you're just strong in military, it's not like with Cleopatra. She likes your military regardless. He's like, no. You have to have a fancy military, I guess.
And just like the Congo, in the past week on CFC, there's been a thread in Civ 6 general discussions about a civ we were going to talk about on the last episode. I really think this is an indirect way of the community telling us we should be talking about these civs, and that's why these threads were started. In fact, Shaka Khan. I'm agreeing with most of what he says here in terms of talking about the specific bonuses, but I disagree with what he describes as garbage bonus number one, and I'm not the only one.
Oh my gosh.
Combat bonus on coastal tiles or on the coast. Just disregard this bonus.
What?
Well, if you want to disregard this bonus, that's fine, but I'm not. What?
And if you pick a map script where there's no coast, then you could say okay. That, but otherwise, no.
But no, yeah.
And it's exactly. Less likely to help you on Pangaea. It still can. It's just less likely. Just it's not as strong then.
It's not as strong as Gia, but any other map is it's an awesome bonus.
Oh, yeah. Especially because of how hard it is to land on people sometimes. Having that there on both your ships and your land units is a pretty big difference. Same with defending yourself, for that matter.
Japan is definitely one of the more versatile civs in Civ 6.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I go random, I'm not disappointed to see Japan on the voting screen.
You may be disappointed with your starting location, but...
Yes, that. But hey, at least I have a civ I can work with.
Next up, we have Norway. The Berserker shares the Samurai issue, basically. Its bonuses are different, but it has the same problems. Gets a bonus when attacking and a penalty when defending. So, civ ability. Norwegian units can enter ocean tiles after researching shipbuilding. Naval melee units heal on neutral territory, so that's something. Units nor additional movement costs from embarking and disembarking, which there was apparently a bug with this, that when they removed Norway further, unfortunately, you used to be able to, like, abuse moving onto and off of coasts to actually travel faster, but I guess that's not a thing anymore. Harald himself is the leader of Norway. They can do coastal raids. This is an amusing bonus. You also get the longship unique unit, which you can use? Question mark?
Yeah, replacing the galley for movement while in coastal waters.
Yeah.
If you play on continents, you build a crap ton of longboats, and instead of attacking the people on your continent, you send a fleet of Vikings to the other continent and just mass pillage because they can't do crap about it. But on a Pangaea, you can, if you're on one side of the Pangaea, then it's worth it to go to the other side across the ocean. Because, well, then they'd have to walk through everybody else to get back at you.
And I guess you can just build a few and screw people with them, regardless of who you're attacking otherwise. So there you go.
Keep stealing their builders and settlers.
Go a Viking. Make everybody adore you early.
Add in all the pillaging policies.
Base agenda is he wants to build a strong navy, respects those with a strong navy, and dislikes those without a strong navy. So when you build the ship in the early game, he might suddenly like you.
Because you have one ship and he's still got none because he didn't bother building it.
Yep.
Also, the AI who is most likely to hit cartography while everybody is still in classical era.
It has a nice impact on great general progression when that happens.
It has a nice impact on every progression.
That's true.
Every single one of them just, guess we're in the Renaissance now. Like what?
And then a little bit strange with the rest of his bonuses is the Stave Church.
Yeah, it's one of the crappier bonuses.
Yeah, you get more adjacency from woods, which,
Whoop-dee-doo.
Yeah.
Yeah, plus one faith, plus one great profit point per turn, plus one relic, plus one citizen slot, available theology.
Everybody else gets all that too, so
it's got a neat name.
Yeah,
and it also seems kind of like there's all this stuff for the Vikings that have to do with combat and combat and combat and combat. Oh, and there's Stave Church,
And especially like coastal combat. And the one thing, you do get more faith early compared to like an average civ, depending. It's just hard to like do a lot with that, but it is there.
By the way, the Stave Church does not get an additional standard adjacency bonus, and you don't get plus one for each forest. You do eventually, but all it does is really add to the standard adjacency bonus from woods, where you need two woods to get one. Now you need one wood to get one. Mountains are still better.
Whatever. You just fashion the other civs to death with your cooler looking stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, I would actually slip Norway into the bottom tier, except for the boats, because that's actually kind of nice.
Yeah, I would definitely say Norway's bottom tier. And even the longships, they're a little expensive. You can defend a city with a couple archers, and unless you're on islands or maybe continents, this is a really weak civ.
And it's not necessarily Norwegian's civ fault. The Berserker would work better if you could upgrade into it.
Yeah. And whoever thought that -7 on the defense for a Berserker was a good idea?
Yeah. I mean, you do get +7 when you attack.
Yeah, and they do get more movement in enemy territory. Yep. So
they can attack a lot.
And they can hit hard when they do. Against the AI, GG stacking on these can make them pretty silly. But
yeah, and if there are no units there to attack, or they're underwhelming units to attack in turn, to attack them, then, well, so be it.
And it and it does use one less movement to pillage.
Yeah.
So true. It's got extra movement and can mass pillage, but it will sit there and a city will wipe out a berserker because city combat strength is stupid.
When you're putting production into units, better to put it into a swords than it is into a berserker overall.
It's also, it shares that problem of getting enough of them fast enough to be really threatening with them. Same as a samurai.
Yep.
Especially on certain game speeds.
How's that, you know, be like online?
Yeah. Well, that would be the one in particular.
Proposal for Mega Bears fan, padding out the Neville Tech line. So, yeah, while he was doing his blog, talking about his personal frustrations with how difficulty, he also came up with the idea of padding out the Neville Tech line. In a nutshell, optics will be added, allows construction of an Explorer recon unit. Scout upgrade sounds very much like the Civ IV version.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a new medieval naval unit. And then Latine Sail allows construction of Caravel and or another medieval naval unit. So he would move Caravel to Optics and then put something else in Cartography, possibly. And it's a start. I don't know how you make naval combat more engaging.
In a later post, Mega Bears fan talks about if he was to rework the entire naval lineup, it would probably look something like this, including new units, including a sloop and a corvette and a dreadnought.
Well,
I'm all for it, but the first thing we have to do is like make it matter more. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, it really doesn't matter like what you put in the game until the naval dominance really, really adversely affects your opponents consistently, excepting like straight up heavy land maps.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you can prove the naval tech tree, whatever. Until naval warfare becomes a better option, then this is icing, not friggin' core.
Well, I wouldn't mind some medieval.
I wouldn't units. Either. I just want to see winning the naval game, then have a significant consequence on the game.
It does, basically.
More so than now.
On an islands map, if you win the naval game, well, that's it.
Always on an islands map. Yeah.
Actually, I mean, the way the AI acts at this point in purely single-player games, if the AI gets to Caravels and you wipe out all of their pre-Renaissance units, they'll never build a naval unit again, pretty much.
Yeah, it's good times.
Because they've managed to basically out-tech their ability to produce.
Yeah, naval combat definitely feels underwhelming in Civ VI right now, particularly, especially because of the AI deficiencies. So when I saw this thread, I actually thought about this more in a multiplayer context, and it made me wonder, is this something that those who are competitive multiplayers, those who like to attack each other, presumably through mostly, if not entirely through domination, then maybe this would be more interesting because then you wouldn't be concerned about the AI derpiness that is on the AI. And it just so happens that our guest, Canuck Soldier, is the head of the Civilization Players League, which is a ongoing multiplayer league for Civilization. So, John, do you think that this would be something that competitive MPers would like to see, this expansion of a naval line? Would it make naval combat at MP more interesting, at least?
Well, there are not that many island games because naval combat is not that substantive right now. So could multiplayer benefit from having a legitimate naval combat ability? Sure thing. Yeah, I mean, we'd have to run this by some playtesting, but if we had more units early on the tech tree, it might invigorate it. Right now, of course, we could always go into the whole discussion. I don't know if we want to go down that rabbit hole of domination being the only victory condition in multiplayer, but that is a fact. So if domination is the condition, but you want domination in a naval sense, then you've got to give us a way to conquer the world on the sea.
The naval side is so thin. There's just not much there for most of anything. So adding anything to it will just make that part a little better. Doesn't really matter if it's military focused or not. It's just too thin with only like a boat here, a boat there, and that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about longships being able to attack coastal cities, but being easy to defend with just a couple archers. So why invest production into ships that don't necessarily get you the gain that you're looking for?
Well, I mean, you have ranged quadcreams that can blast the crap out of archers. You do have a ranged version yourself. Pulling the raider class out of the Renaissance, adding in a corsair for the medieval era helps.
Yeah.
And if you say the longship is the ancient era unique unit version, that'd be fine. It would be able to upgrade through corsair, then privateer, rather than having to start privateers from scratch. So that'd be nice. He wants to add a recon class, but I'm not really sure that's necessary because you already have the melee class running through.
He just wanted the upgraded, scout though, which is like adding that to naval tech, but it would be a land unit from my understanding. It just explores other areas better.
We talked about improving navies, so why not improve the religious game? Seeing as how we talked about, you're the Congo, you can't get a religious victory? You know, don't worry about it. Also on CFC, started by Tempu. Having been on this forum for some time, I have got the feeling that the religious game feels lackluster to many players. There are three main sources for this. Religious units of other players clutter your territory, if you don't beat them. The religious victory is very hard to achieve in multiplayer and by the AI, because the religious units get killed straight away by combat units. And the bonuses from faith are, although not minimal, less competitive compared to other resources. So, first suggests, add a separate unit layer for religious units. There's already a separation into combat support and civilian in Civ 6. However, the separation with religious units has to be different in that units from different civilizations could occupy a single tile simultaneously, provided they are units of different types. I would be fine with adding a separate unit layer for religious units, so long as, if I want to clear religious units by declaring war and marching my swordsman on top of a missionary, the missionary still goes squish.
Yeah, if you're fighting them, yes.
Well, yeah, because if I don't have the ability to squish the missionary units with my military units to demonstrate how much I don't want their religion in my territory, that would be bad.
The fact that, I can't move my military unit onto this hex because there is a missionary, and you know what, I'm fine with this missionary spreading religion in my cities because I'm not paying attention to the religious game at all. But yeah, that would be nice.
Or maybe you're cool with what they're spreading to you, like your Congo or something, but now you can't improve your tile for, five turns while that idiocy goes on. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. I mean, do you remember in Civilization V when we didn't have open borders with the Civ and you sent a missionary into their territory? If you ended your turn in their territory, the efficacy of your unit went down in terms of the religious pressure. I mean, at least in that case, it was fine. Sit there for 5 turns where I don't have open borders with you and then you go poof because you got no strength left. But we don't even have that in Civ 6. It's just, nope, I don't want you to improve your coal. Go on. Declare war on me, I double dare you, which at some point, okay, maybe that is what you want to do anyway, but that shouldn't be your quote-unquote only response if they don't move their unit. I'm looking at you, AI. You've already got your unit in my border. Why don't you spread the religion to me instead of sitting there like a... insert explicative here.
Or give no penalty for stepping on a religious unit to get it out of the way. Just no penalty whatsoever. Screw them. No war. Doesn't exist. Just, you're wiped. Goodbye. Get out.
I mean, after all, in open war right now, it's like, oh, hey, there's your unescorted great general. I'm going to kill it.
Nope.
Wait, what do you mean you just got ejected back? What the hell? So at the very least, if you're not going to kill the religious unit that way, I think would certainly and would want to be able to in combat. If not in combat, then moving the unit onto where that missionary is sends it back home. Just allow us to actually move the unit. Say, hey, no, we don't want to declare war on you. Say, I don't know, Spain. But I don't want your missionary here, this particular hex, because I would like to improve my coal.
Well, maybe part of the religious UI could be added policies. Policies around religion. As in, I really dislike your religion. If your units enter my borders, I will kill them. And then anybody of that religion will know that. And then they can deal with it as you step on their units for entering your territory. And then maybe you can have some diplomacy of the religions a little bit more.
Why did my brain go, what Magin is saying is he wants the Apostolic Palace. And I know it's...
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Dance is wondering, what could I say that would troll right now? Let's see. yes. Bring back Tap. That would be great. Everyone would appreciate that.
I know that's not what you meant, but
no, there would be some balance. Like if you say this religion is not allowed in my territories, period, then anybody who follows that religion would probably not like that and get a small penalty with you. But anybody who follows that religion who would know not to send their units into your territory.
He also suggests greatly increase the number of religious great people. The roles would be the conventional great prophet role for the first unlocked religions, great person for each civilization, and the following religious people would be great philosophers. These philosophers could have various bonuses similar to great merchants, and then references a concept thread for great philosophers. I don't feel that we need to have a different degree of religious people to call, okay, we've got a great prophet here and a great philosopher there. Just have some different capabilities for the great prophet, if you even felt that was necessary, but I don't think we really need to split that, such as, yeah, it was referenced great generals to great admirals, except, and I'm not really worried about spreading my religion in the open ocean, quite frankly, although maybe the fish would like to convert to my religion, I don't know.
You never know. Greatly increase the number of religious great people. Well, maybe. Some philosopher thing. Maybe. The underlying point of that is that great profit points stop being a thing the moment you get one.
Yeah,
or don't get one. But then you still keep building great people points, and you still keep getting lots and lots of them for
what
great profits.
What am I supposed to do with all these profit points? I don't need them. Can't
literally
I convert
nothing.
This to take?
Like it's a giant hole in the system.
Why not set up a flag that once you've gotten a great prophet, it starts automatically converting to faith at some sort of a ratio? I mean, not necessarily 1-to-1, but maybe 2-to-1 or something. Like 2 great people, prophet points, 1 faith or per turn or something. I don't know.
How about you can use those instead of faith to buy other great people? So you just basically build up a pool, and then you can apply it at some ratio, I'm sure. And maybe that ratio is adjusted based on if you're a theocracy or not.
Better rates for theocracies, not so great rates if you're a democracy.
Yeah.
And then his third suggestion for increasing the relevance of religion also addresses the third point, which is to make the purchasing capabilities of gold and faith more comparable. One way to achieve this would be to separate the purchases more evenly into gold purchases, for example, buildings in the encampment, industrial zone, commercial hub, and combat units, and faith, for example, buildings in the Holy Site Theater District and entertainment complex districts, and religious units. Or make all purchases possible through policy cards only. For example, 2 distinct military cards enable for purchasing land combat units from a particular era with both gold and faith.
Well, doesn't that undercut the theocracy government?
It would, as its current suggestion of being able to purchase land units with faith. Yes. Not necessarily a bad thing, but you wouldn't then want to leave theocracy the way it is, because then...
Yeah, you'd have to change the whole thing.
Yeah.
Could you spend faith to buy stuff that isn't faith-y type stuff? Yeah. I mean, you could probably slip in some policies here and there, or maybe adjust theocracy to allow for something like that, but I wouldn't make it a bigger thing. Kind of starts really going away from the whole concept of having to generate some form of income to pay for things, because I'm pretty sure people don't really take faith as a payment.
Well, some might, but the most will not.
All I really have to say, this is, there's a religious war aspect to this game. It's currently really not there at all, and no one in MP really cares. Some civs benefit from getting a religion, but it's not really to go in a religious war. It's just to, improve your civ's abilities. Would that improve if we change things? I'm not sure without an entire revamp of the religious system that we can make a religious war something that's fun, which is really what it comes down to, right?
Oh, I mean, the religious victory is kind of like, I mean, for multiplayer, I doubt you're going to get before you get a conquest victory, because you kind of have to go squish them first. I mean, you could, in theory, if you spread your religion to somebody first and then go conquer all the other founders. But
like, you could probably conquer the person that you spread it to first if you conquered all the other founders and they didn't do anything to you to stop it.
Like, to be honest, the only time I've seen a religious victory in MP was in a one city challenge game where, everyone's only got one city. So,
Oh, I thought you were going to say the only time you saw a religious victory in multiplayer is when the domination victory was disabled.
Well, I've never seen that, so.
that would result in everyone getting conquered, and then the person would just sit there until they got a different victory, basically.
Score.
Yeah, I mean, sure, you could just like conquer everybody else and just mash end turn until the game ends. That's true. You would win.
Although I got to point out that one of the suggestions in the thread is a little silly. He's like, you compete against other civs for more founder profits. If you get another one before somebody else gets it, you murder him automatically, which gives you a relic, a diplomatic penalty with every other civ, and effectively reduce the number of possible religions by one. Like, hey, we founded a religion. Awesome. Hey, you're going to found another religion. Stab. Mahaha. Screw you, people. No religion for you. That makes no sense.
That would be pretty lousy, though. I would approve that because it's lousy.
Yep. Is the combat bonus for the Aeon Deity too much? So AI gets plus 4 on Deity. Actually, it gets a progressive combat bonus, sync starting at King? Is it King?
Yes.
King gets 1, Emperor gets 2, Immortal gets 3, and Deity gets 4.
Yes. Prince is your levelist playing field, air quotes.
Yeah. So the AI gets a tiny, tiny, tiny combat bonus, which if they also go oligarchy really quickly, because they can on Deity, then they have plus 9 against you, and, well, that's a little much.
Oligarchy's only plus 4, right? Although 8 still hurts.
Yeah. So,
but is it too much? Like, the only thing I comment on this is Archer. That Firaxis did say that they didn't want to give the AI combat bonuses in previous civs. So that is a divergence from that design philosophy. But then we do have different designers. But also, like, it doesn't really matter. If you're going to give them 6 free Eurekas, if you're going to give them multiple free settlers, you're going to give them that stuff. Those are substantially much greater advantages for the AI, or like the Civ 4 tech king they had, and basically no maintenance. Those are huge, huge relative bonuses than what you would get with combat strength. So, I mean, you're just moving where their strengths are, I guess. At the end of the day, they're just getting bonuses.
This one actually is slightly better choice for a bonus, because the AI is kind of really crappy at combat. So giving them a little bit of extra combat strength as you scale up. And it's not like it's a, oh, you're going to die because the AI sent a single unit because it's got so much of a bonus. No, no. Relativistically small bonus compared to what would actually hurt.
Yeah.
But realistically, the AI is not going to rush to a classical great general and rush you with horses with a general. So you're going to do that, and a plus 4 bonus really isn't a significant factor.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun though? You have like Montezuma spam Eagle Warriors push an encampment early, hook up a couple luxuries with their bonus starting units, and that would hurt. That would be like getting hit by swords that cost warrior levels of cost. That would be so fun to deal with.
They cost slightly more than warriors to build.
Slightly.
A little
bit. Is that really true for the DD AI though in practice?
Well, yeah. No. Now if Monty can find a bunch of luxuries and
well, basically
and
saying
get
the AI optimized for this, which
it's not going to happen. But
that's not going to happen. Yeah,
that'd be amazing though. The salt would be real.
Or you can go plant a bunch of cities around a bunch of luxuries, hook them up, and then sell them to Monty, and then laugh at everybody who's neighbor to Monty.
Yeah.
Although I guess to point out, if you fortify, you go past the DD AI bonus.
Yeah.
For combat strength, so
defensive terrain too. The fortify plus defensive terrain can make it really hard on them.
Yep. So even if they get a bonus, your bonus is better. So
yeah. Let's face it, the AI is not smart enough to use the plus 4 anyway in an effective manner. So
yeah. And I mean, you need a 30-point gap to insta-kill something. So
yeah. Really don't want to take a 10-point disadvantage from multiple units, though. That tends to lose you stuff.
That would be called playing badly.
Yeah, like the AI does.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, and like if you're caught by these early rushes, just throw a warrior on defensive terrain like near your city, and that kind of chokes their ability to surround it, and they attack your warrior and lose a lot of health, and even a slinger will hold it off. It's really stupid.
Yeah, and then you can promote.
Yep.
Which
heals you and gives you more strength.
Yep.
It's not hard to hold those off from the AI, unless you get caught out, but that's not the AI then.
Yeah, if the AI was smart enough to create general stack and bring in friggin' legions, then this would be a problem.
Yeah.
Or it could use its Eurekas to just spit knights on you super early with double great general and have plus 10 and 6 moves. Yeah, that'd be great fun to deal with.
Yep. Although it doesn't get to pick the Eurekas, so at least that's good.
Well, if you got six, though, it's odds on you can rush out knights faster than a human player.
Depends on the era, but yeah. Certain eras, it's easier to get all the good stuff.
In response to this thread started by Loxass, Balkans says, if you play on Deity, please don't play it like a builder. At least not on the first 50 turns. Greed is good, but on Deity you need to be prepared, quite simple, and as soon as you see what's up, you go crazy builder, just like you play on Settler difficulty. And Loxass says, so, for what you are saying, Deity means war after war after war.
No.
To which HF22 says, easy win on Deity means war. You have to build the units early to protect yourself, so you may as well use them. Which I would say that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be in war after war after war, or necessarily domination, but you don't want to make yourself a target. It's kind of like in a parking lot. Your vehicle is unattended. You're inside a store. It is a potential target for a thief, but you know what? You lock your car, and thieves are going to be looking for something that's not locked.
You will get rushed.
Just make yourself less of a target. Make someone else more likely of a target.
That's impossible. You will be attacked on Deity sometimes because everyone else will have more units. And you
everybody started with more units.
Yeah. There's no realistic way. Like, you can do nothing but build military from turn zero and you'll still be weaker militarily rating to the Deity AI. Depending on the personality, you will be targeted.
Well, city-states get targeted, but yeah.
Yeah. You can defend yourself. You can see as many as six warriors inside a short handful of turns just walking up on you.
Yep.
But if you plan for that, you can survive it. It's not even that difficult to survive it. You just don't want to be caught in a position where those six warriors surround your capital for free and you can live.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you're not going to be attacked.
But you will not deter them. That's not realistic.
Well, you can at least delay them.
No, they will just target you right away.
Yeah, sometimes. Give them something else to go after first. Or at the very least, if they declare war on you, let's see how this goes. Oh, gee, it's not going so well. So then they back off. Just make it so that you're not going to get squished. You got to be able to
kill them.
You need to know your map. I mean, certain map types you're more likely to be. Oh, I'm on Pangaea. You're probably more likely to be attacked very quickly, even by multiple sources, as compared to, say, being on island plates.
Well, if you're on isolated continents, then you're not going to get warrior rushed inside 20, 30 turns.
So know your map, explore, defend yourself.
Yeah, besides, there's still the barbs that are going to spawn right beside you and be more of a problem than the AI is anyway, so.
That's true. Yeah, ultimately, you want units early.
And that's not Deity only, well, so. Especially them barbs.
Yeah, the barbs are actually far more efficient and effective at attacking a city early game than the AI is.
They're a lot more annoying.
Yeah, they're not there to take your city. No, they're just there to wreck your day of being able to do anything with your cities.
They will make you lose if you let them pillage you out, though. Like, that's...
Oh, yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, yeah.
If you let the barbs do what they want, yes, you will lose.
And they won't officially kill you, probably, but... Effectively, you're out of the game if you let that happen.
Elsewise, in the thread from Storm Mern, who is responding to the suggestion from Locust that we need to do something about the combat bonus, says, no, I'd keep it as it is. On a single player at Deity level, human players are not supposed to win every time against the AI. The game will beat you any way it can achieve that, whether you like that way or not. If it were otherwise, players would complain even more bitterly about it. To which Locust says, I understand what you say, but higher difficulties now feels like a lottery more than ever.
My gosh.
Really?
This other game stuff, Pangaea, I was very, very far from the AI. I built this massive empire and won, not because I'm a genius, but because I was far enough from them. So how is this cool? I could just choose a huge map versus two AI, civs, and win, then just boast, look, I won a Deity game. The way that it is just now, it's a lottery.
Oh, boy.
Really? Because people have been doing that on the freaking smallest maps. You don't build a huge map and go, look, I beat Deity because I beat two AIs on a huge map. No. People pull out the smallest of small maps, put Congo on the other side, and go, hey, look, I won a religious victory.
There's winning and there's, you know, winning. Context is important.
I cannot believe that somebody's asserting that Deity is more of a lotto ticket now than ever.
Oh, I don't know. Boy. Civ 4 probably had the biggest lotto ticket.
Pre-BTS Civ 4 specifically.
Yep.
Because they had more bonuses then. Like, the AI was weaker before Beyond the Sword, but Firaxis loaded their bonuses. You would see BC's liberalism from the AI sometimes. Not commonly, but you could. You would have to be like top tier just to win. Much smaller percentage of people could be Deity. You could be lottoed to death there, although it was rare, because the AI could just attack you with stacks of units that you couldn't defend against. Literally couldn't. Even that was comparatively rare, that you couldn't do anything about it.
I would say Civ 5 and Civ 6 have definitely made it too easy for people to play Deity. or the top level, whatever.
That was an obvious consequence of the stacking, yeah. though.
No.
Thing stacking.
Nah. I think it's just a little simpler to play.
That's true, but the AI in Civ 4 really isn't that great. It's quite terrible at war. But it could load so many hammers on you, and you really had no counterplay for it initially.
I think it was still better at the economic game, though. Like, the economic game where you had to actually balance out your science versus your gold, and you had to pay for stuff, out of which effectively took away from your science.
The AI was actually quite bad at that, but the high difficulties gave it freebies there to the point where it didn't matter. It could settle as many cities as it wanted without teching, and it would never bankrupt on deity. Technically paid maintenance, but it essentially didn't, and it built units for well under half the cost.
Yeah.
It was basically just more bonused, and the game rules were better set up for it to take advantage of those bonuses. Nothing you will encounter in Civ 6 is anywhere near what you could encounter in even Civ 4 BTS, let alone the stuff that happened before it.
It was just uglier
in
general. But then again, I mean, better AI is always the request.
Be nice.
Or just say screw it and go play multiplayer.
But then you would need to balance your mechanics so that they're consistently relevant in multiplayer. Yeah. Right, Religious Victory?
Yeah.
Well, Steve Indy posted on the forums and he had a quick thought about, we've all had this, the wonder that gets built the turn before you do. Like, well, it just goes away and it turns into a pile of gold. That's not at all realistic. Although he says that's not his issue. Tough to plan for that, of course, because the wonders take so long and we don't get the return that we used to in other games. But he was thinking that some smaller versions of, if you started something like, I'm going to give an example, if you started the pyramids, instead of being the great pyramids at Gaza, maybe it's one of the other smaller pharaoh's tombs and you could still get some benefit from it. Something for all those turns you put the production into, as opposed to that, instead of just, here's this crappy pile of gold.
See, I would just love for them to stay on the map. Oh, you failed. Well, it's still on the map, though. And sure, you could probably go use a builder charge to go clean it up and take all the stuff back.
That would be good. I'd love that.
And it'd be nice if they didn't just up and disappeared in a puff of smoke. And you're like, so what did we work on for the last while? Yeah, we were trying to build this library type thing, but apparently somebody over there built a better looking one, so we just lit a match and walked away.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's only like half the production you put in. Put a builder on that, it takes the turn to do it, and you can get half the production back. That would be great.
Well, I agree with the concept that maybe that you get a mini version of it. Some of the wonders just, to me, seem like you tried to build a library, and it was going to be great, but somebody else got a better one. Why don't you still get a library?
Couldn't I have a boosted library or theirs or something?
Yeah, or a backup library.
Yeah.
Just in case the other one gets burned down by accident.
There you go. With that, it could be like the second library. My city's so awesome, we have two libraries.
Or the fact that Stonehenge just happens to be the most famous stone circle, but there was actually a crap ton of stone circles built well before Stonehenge ever got built.
And then to me, that even opens up the consideration of, hey, did you hear about our neighbors? They constructed this thing called the Great Library. Maybe we could do something like that, but it's not going to be as great as the Great Library because it was first. I know we're kind of going for a little bit of gameplay here versus realism, but then maybe you could construct the slightly less Great Library.
Yeah, as more of a national version.
Yes.
Bring back some national wonders?
Yeah.
But not for every wonder, because that would just be weird.
No,
but...
yeah, that would get kind of ridiculous. I mean, think about the Great Lighthouse. I mean, really? They built a super big lighthouse. We already have smaller lighthouses. I'm going to build a medium lighthouse there.
Nah, take that.
You got the Great Lighthouse and the Very Good Lighthouse and the Good Lighthouse and the Better Than Average Lighthouse.
You guys go with the Civ 6 Great Lighthouse. I'll just build the Civ 4 one in Civ 6.
Yep.
All the way to go.
No, Phil.
But some of the stuff should be possibly maybe change how wonders get built for some of them. Because, say, Stonehenge. How about everybody can build stone circles, if you so choose. Or stone, whatever, because there was more than just circles ever built back then. There was multiple other types of stone monolith stuff going on. But maybe you'd build them from scratch and they're a tile improvement, although you can't build too many of them. You can build a couple, maybe one per city. The one that generates 100 faith first becomes Stonehenge. So if you build it in a super faithy spot versus not a super faithy spot, then yours is going to become Stonehenge.
Or for some of them, you use up one of those bonus resources. Like for Stonehenge or for the pyramids, you could use up a stone resource on the map, and you'd have to choose between having that tile with extra production or having that wonder with its other benefits. You know, or you could have like copper for the Colossus.
Yeah, if you've tossed some bronze at it.
Yeah. See?
Yeah. And then the Great Library, well, maybe you had to build the campus district and a library first. And then that library can become great.
There you go.
If you, I don't know, get some writing or some other stuff in it.
Sacrifice or great work.
Well, yeah, great work or writing. Sacrifice one of those. Make it great.
There you go.
Stuff like that. There's a number of wonders that are possible that could be converted to use it. Not, hey, I randomly built this thing. Well, let's burn everybody else's down first.
Yeah.
But I would also like wonders to stay on the map if you burned that city down, rather than, hey, look, I burned your city down. I build the wonder again.
No.
Like, oh, you beat me to it. Burn. Ha! Now I can build it.
I'm pretty sure if you burn the closest city to the Great Pyramids would still be there.
Yep.
I will burn the Great Pyramids somehow.
Yeah. Somehow. Well, if it's late enough air, you could nuke them, but you know.
Yeah,
that's not really the burn that brings them down. It's more like a concussive force, but I mean, whatever works.
It involves fire at some point.
Yeah, there'll be some fire.
Nuclear fire.
There might be better ways to do wonders.
Yeah.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 441-212-887659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
If you're getting out of CPL and you're just playing randoms online, there's a good chance you can find people who can't beat mid to high level AI and that would be quite bad in MP settings.
That is true. Well, quit by turn 30 anyway. That's why we have our...
AI won't quit by turn 30. No, although I would like to see a mechanic like that, where if you're just running away with the game, they surrender.
Well, no, that's what happens when the game crashes. The AI flipped the table and walked away.
Well, I just had this vision of the AI player has quit. The human will now take control.
Yeah, fun with that.
Yeah, next they'll program the AI to put signs on the map so you can't actually click on your units.
Troll AI.
That would be amazing. Like, before you even play a turn, your entire area is just flooded.
Flooded with signs, yep.
It reads, I saw the sign, and it opened up my...
Yeah, one sign at a time with all the lyrics of Ace of Base. There you go.
This has been the 284th episode of Polycast. I'm Dan Q, and I've been... Let me try that again. I've been joined by Makalua. The me and team.
Phenomena.
Imagine.
Bye.
Canuck Soldier.
Glad to be here again. Maybe I can break some records if I'm liked enough.
Break some more records. And thanks to everyone for listening.
Mackie's fan wants to talk about Japan. Or Mackie's fan knows that we're not supposed to talk about Japan and is doing a really good job.
My fan is literally the divine wind.
Oh.
Granted, I'm under the personal belief that archery style units are not supposed to be anti-naval. I don't believe they could or should be anti-naval. That should be on the catapult line, like reality was.
They're just a damn good shot, Matt.
Yeah. They can shoot quite the distance.
And they can shoot heavy arrows quite the distance.
Yeah.
That.
Record date?
June 24th, 2017.
Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.